Empire podcast this week, we strike up a pretty tune with the director of Once and Sing Street, John Carney. Plus, we tackle X-Men Apocalypse and, as usual, mix of news and nonsense on the movie podcast as thinking of changing its name to Quinn McKenna. Hello, Pod. I'm Quinn McKenna, and welcome to the Empire Podcast. This week, I'm joined by two colleagues of such lethal cunning. First up is a lady who, if she could change her name to anything by Deadpool, wouldn't stray too far, I don't think. She'd still be Helen O'Hara, but she would actually then be Helen O'Hara Winchester Winchester, because she'd be married to both the Winchesters, you see.
I wouldn't. No? I only love one of them, you know this.
Dean or Sam?
Yes, correct.
That's the one. I should watch that show at some point.
You really should, just so you can get some fresh jokes from it, you know.
I want to know. I think that train is long sailed.
Like God has just turned up, for example.
No.
Yeah, actual God.
But isn't he in Preacher as well? Is it the same God?
It's a better God, I bet, in Supernatural.
Is it God as himself?
Yes.
Did you just declare war on Preacher?
No.
You
did? No, I did not declare war on Preacher. I would never.
Is Preacher Supernatural influenced? Are there elements of Preacher in Supernatural? Yes.
Probably. They've certainly stolen a lot from Sandman and American Gods, so okay. Maybe.
Next up is a man who, if he could change his name by Deadpool, he would no longer be Johnny Pyle. He'd be Johnny Declaration of Independence, Ben Gates Rocks. He's our very own national treasure, Johnny Pyle. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, yeah.
Do you prefer that? Because when you first started on the podcast, you were, you know, I was trying to label you as the street food king who would just grab people's plates.
Yeah, I forgot about that,
without asking, but now you're the national treasure.
What I am?
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. I'll take it.
That's good.
Yeah.
Have you watched National Treasure this week?
I've watched the sequel twice and the first one just once.
We all have quotas to hit. Okay, we have a question. It is a superhero-related question, but I think this one's fun. I thought this one was fun, which is why I put it in. It is from at Paolo Cellamare. I think I've nailed
wow.
that. I think I've nailed that pronunciation.
Amazing.
He's probably at home going, it's Paul Smith. What are you doing? It's not Paolo Cellamare at all. It's quite close to my Danny Boyle. What superhero costume from a movie would you feel more comfortable wearing?
More comfortable than what?
No, hang on.
Your normal clothes. You know, you're dressed in your Giacomo finest.
Oh. This is. No, fair enough.
I've got my Ben Sherman. We're all good. So if we weren't dressed like this, like normal people, I do have a Return of the Jedi T-shirt on, which is either it's got too small or I've got too big.
Maybe we're
meeting in the middle. I'm not sure.
I'm taking the fifth. Do we, and this is really important, do we have 6 months with a personal trainer before we don these costumes?
No. Or yes, but you have to pay for it yourself.
Oh,
no way. So what we're really looking for is something... Yeah.
Forgiving.
Well, I mean, less forgiving and just fake, because the Schumacher era Batman, or in fact the Burton era Batman.
Sure.
In fact, most Batmans from 1989 onwards have fairly strong, body armor. Some with nipples, some without. I'd take the nipples.
You would take the nipples.
Yeah, I'd take the nipples.
Okay. Yeah. I would too. Go with nipples. Yeah, and pubes.
No. No.
No.
No.
No pubes, just nipples.
Steel, copper wire.
No.
Okay.
Really not.
All right, because you can't really think of many superhero costumes that have the full pubis going on. It's not.
I wonder.
Only
no,
two
I don't
spring
wonder
to
why.
Mind.
Yeah. What, really?
No.
Okay.
Okay. So you would want something with nipples, but would you want specifically a Batman costume? Would you want to go around dressed as Batman?
I'd want that Batman costume.
Which one?
The nipple
Batman and Robin. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's. That's
and then I would. I'd get Ben Stiller and Robert De Niro in, and I'd try and get them to milk me.
Would you shave? Because at the moment you're quite hirsute. I mean, so people would guess your secret identity from that. It would go, who's that Batman? Oh, it's Johnny because he's got the beard.
Everyone has a beard now. You have a beard.
I don't have a beard. I have a collection of hairs on my rather stations or a protest on my chin. It's not the same thing.
I think in the area of London that we most frequent, up on our street food markets and our craft beer bars, you know how it is, Chris.
God, we sound like the worst people. Yeah, I know exactly what it is like. Yeah.
I think it seems like not having a beard would give away my secret identity readily.
This is true. This is true. So you'd patrol the streets of Shoreditch dressed as Batman. Helen, what would you what would you do?
I think it's quite difficult for a girl because, you know, unless you want a belly top, that like massively reduces your options. And
what's a belly top?
Like a belly-bearing top.
Okay.
Like a crop top.
A crop top.
They're in, right?
I mean, they are, sure, but not really so much for me particularly. And, I mean, there are also fewer, obviously, female superhero costumes, and they are often less exciting. Like Black Widow, she looks great. Mm-hmm. It's just some black suit thing. Like, it's nothing very spectacular, you know. I reckon maybe the Wonder Woman, the new Wonder Woman look, I quite like that.
Okay.
It's quite stylish.
But would you feel comfortable wearing it?
I don't think anyone feels comfortable wearing it because there's a lot of corsetry involved. And there would be even more corsetry if I was in it. So, you know, that you've got to... It's not comfortable, no, but it would look cool. So...
Okay. Why don't you join me in my Schumacher-era Batman?
Because then I'd have to be dressed as Alicia Silverstone. So I'm not sure that that's a good look, really.
Or you could be dressed as Catwoman.
No, are we talking like
actually,
Pfeiffer Catwoman or Barry Catwoman?
Are we being really clear on superhero? And am I in vigilante territory? Is that what you were saying?
No, I think Batman's a superhero. Okay, You're fine.
Well, if he's a superhero, then Catwoman's a superhero. She's actually got, you know, some more superpowers than he does.
Well, because, you know,
nine lives,
yeah,
cat senses and all that, whatever.
Six out litter trays.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Lands on her feet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, the point is, I'm not, you know, I think like quite a lot of extra material might be needed to get into some of the, like, Michelle Pfeiffer had to diet to get into that suit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that is not, that's a size -2. That's not even a size 0, presumably. So that I'm not a size 0. So it would take a bit of work.
Okay. So
hence the personal trainer for 6 months.
I did it for 6 months. I'm not getting in that suit. No one's getting in that suit.
No one's getting in that suit. No.
Honestly,
like, not even 6 months. No.
I really thought 6 months was a long time to be a personal trainer, and just no. It's minimal. It takes forever. Don't believe the cover lines you read on certain fitness magazines. 6 weeks to a beach body ready.
Get six abs. That's what usually
six they, abs they, in they six say. Weeks. Yeah. One ab per week.
They're very specific about the number of abs. Get 3 abs in 3 months. Oh, that sounds great. I actually did go to a personal trainer once. For about when I was in the build-up to getting married. Then obviously I just said, fuck it, and let myself go monumentally. But after that, but before that, it was hellish. It was absolutely hellish. He would ask me to do things that I just did not want to do.
Chris, I feel like you need to maybe talk to a professional about this.
He said he was a personal trainer.
I mean, that...
Yeah.
Wow.
No, he had me lifting things and sweating hard, and yeah, it was interesting. Anyway, but yeah, I did enjoy it. But which is why my superhero costume would be the George Reeves Superman or the Adam West Batman, because that is a forgiving costume. That is a costume made for a man with an ample gut. That is the idgaff Superman and Batman.
Yeah, so you're back in corsetry as well, is what you're telling me, basically.
Well, yeah, and also, as you know, I'm a big fan of wearing my underpants outside my trousers. So I think that is fine. The Henry Cavill Superman, I mean, that's just an impossible ideal. Chris Evans as Captain America, you know, even though his biceps, I believe, were based on mine in the helicopter sequence in Civil War. Again, that's just an impossible ideal. I mean, you just look at him in t-shirts and you just go, that's, I mean, what's your cup size, mate? This is mental.
There was a theory that back when Winter Soldier, I think, came out, that somebody was lying to him. Somebody at S.H.I.E.L.D. was lying to him about what sizes t-shirts came in these days. Some intern was sent out to buy stuff for him and was like, no, I'm sorry, this is the biggest they've got. So sorry, man.
He does like a tight top, doesn't he, Steve Rogers?
He does appear to.
He does.
Yeah.
Whereas you look at George Reeves Superman, and that's, you know, that's you know, way back in the day, and that was just a man wearing a blue dress, essentially, with just some underpants over the top. Or, you know, if you wanted to, I could go full Hulk post transformation and just walk around in torn purple trousers and little else, listeners, if you want to have that mental image. Just seeing you through your weekend, just powering on through. There you go. I could be painted green in that one. But that's what I feel most comfortable wearing. I wouldn't want to wear something that had a muscle suit or was constrictive in the crotch area. Okay, shall we move on?
Please, let's.
if you wish to have your question read out on the Empire Podcast, we're on Twitter as at Empire Magazine. Use the hashtag Empire Podcast, as Paolo Gelamari did. And we're also on Facebook, Empire Magazine. And you can email us, podcast@empireonline.com. And in fact, use that email address to send in your questions and thoughts about X-Men Apocalypse, which we'll be talking about later on in the show. It is out now in the UK. As ever, we will have a spoiler special coming up about that film. It's going to be out, I think, on May the 30th after the US release next Friday on the 27th. We have interviews with Bryan Singer and Simon Kinberg for that as well. But I'm sure once you've seen the film, you're going to have lots of things you want to know about and want to talk to us about. Email podcast@empireonline.com and mark the subject heading X-Men. And we will hopefully discuss it when we sit down to record our portion of the podcast next week. Cool. Right. So, movie news. What's been happening? There's been lots of things happening.
So much, yes. Which one do you want to start with?
Let's not start with Marvel. Let's start with this rumor. It's a rumor going around, but it seems it's almost certain now to coalesce into fact that Daniel Craig has turned down a mega money deal. £68 million, if you believe the Daily Mail. And
what?
Quite frankly, I don't. But if you were to believe the Daily Mail, I'm sure you're not listening to this podcast if you do. £68 million turned down.
I don't buy that.
For two more Bond movies.
Good.
He said no. Johnny, straight in with the incendiary opinions.
Wow.
Because he sees Ben Gates very much, I'm guessing, as the James Bond.
If Nick Cage doesn't do it, then I'm not interested. No, it's about time to move on, isn't it?
Do you think?
Yeah.
Do you not think that the Spectre didn't exactly leave on a high and maybe one more go just to.
I think they think it did leave him on a high, don't they?
No, I think they know better, don't they?
Do they?
I think so.
Commercially, it didn't do as well as Skyfall. Critically, it didn't do as well as Skyfall. It won an Oscar, but for a diabolical song, so I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, I didn't like it. I'm ready for new blood.
New blood, which means reboot, I'm guessing.
Oh, do we have to?
Simply recast?
Let's just recast and move on. There were, of course, the inevitable rumours that...
I'm up for it. Yeah.
That Chris is up for it, so that should put that one to bed. And Tom Hiddleston apparently was seen in Soho House with Barbara Broccoli, somebody said.
They stopped betting, didn't they?
They did stop betting. But like 6 months ago, they stopped betting on Tom Hardy, who's the least likely person to play Bond I can think of. So I think that they just stop betting for no reason sometimes to start betting on other people. And in any case, it's you know, it's...
You know your betting.
I do. I know my betting, yeah. But I just... What would... You know, who bets on who the next James Bond is going to be?
People with inside information. Smirsh. Might do it. Who knows? It's... don't forget, of course, the Radiohead thing back before Christmas when bookmakers suspended betting on Radiohead doing the next Bond theme because some guy plonked $15,000 on it.
Yeah.
And... He must have known, this guy must have had somehow information that Radiohead had recorded a Bond theme. So, but as we know,
it
turned
out. It didn't pan out. And it could be the same here, you know, that it could be Barbara Broccoli meeting up with Tom Hiddleston to say, hey, I think you're great and I love The Night Manager and we'd like you to do this other completely unrelated to Bond film for all we know.
I mean, they could just be pals.
They could just be buddies.
Maybe they're dating.
Let's start that rumour. Let's not start that rumour, sorry. No, I love Tom Hiddleston. I want better.
Are we starting? Are we not starting it?
We're not starting it.
We're not starting.
No, no. That lascivious gossip is destined for another podcast. But quite possibly.
Barbara Broccoli, Tom Hiddleston dating spoiler special.
Yes, which will be out next Wednesday. So if you have any questions for us, do email podcast@empireonline.com. Use the subject heading Hiddlebrock.
Brockleston.
What would they be called?
Brockleston. Yeah, that sounds good.
Hiddley.
Did you hear the Chris Evans, Jenny Slate portmanteau? Captain Obvious.
What's happening to this podcast?
Captain Obvious. Captain America. Obvious Child. Captain Obvious. Yeah.
Captain Child, right?
No, there's
you don't go start and start, but that's not how you do it.
Yeah, but it's funnier. There's no rules to these things. You go with whatever works best.
Humour's only funny with strict rules.
I thought it only had to be one word, doesn't it? Like Brangelina and Bennifer.
Oh, hang on, they're first names. So it'd be Bartom.
Tombola? No, that doesn't work. What's happening?
Is this a new section?
This is
anyway,
a new section.
So we don't know who's going to be the next Bond. Who would you like to see play Bond?
We've talked about this loads and loads of times in the podcast.
Okay, let's move on.
I don't know. I'd love to see Fassbender do it, but I suspect he may be too old these days.
Mm.
He's 38, 39, something like that.
Yeah, he's younger, at least younger than...
Yeah, but you want someone who's going to be able to give it a proper good 10-year, five-movie run and not get too aged.
Hiddleston isn't much younger than that. He's, what, 34, 35?
Yeah, something like that. Mm. He does look a little bit younger, though.
Fair enough.
You could argue.
All right.
Yeah. But, yeah, what if...
Sure.
See, this is the thing. If I were Barbara Broccoli and I knew who was going to be the new James Bond...
You'd put the bet on.
I'd put the bet on.
You could fund the movie that way.
Isn't that inside betting?
I don't know. Are
you get a pal to do it.
Yeah. Get Daniel Craig.
Still inside betting though, isn't it? Even if you get a pal to do it.
I mean, how many... I mean, someone's got the information from somewhere. So, I mean, how many lines away, how many degrees of separation is it before it stops becoming insider betting? Mm. Trading?
Not a lot, I think. I don't know. Mm. But I guess we're getting more Bond films, so, you know... I've already lost. So.
Oh, God. Oh,
Never saw that coming.
They were going to stop after Spectre. maybe someday someone will make a Bond movie you like, Ellen.
It's happened occasionally.
Okay. Mm.
So you like Casino Royale?
Yeah.
See?
Fine.
You like Casino Royale?
Yeah, it's all right. Didn't love it. It's all right.
You love Casino Royale?
I didn't.
My God. Revelations of the Empire podcast. I did not know it was your favourite film. That's amazing. Let's talk about something else.
Sure.
Let's talk about Cold Hard Fact, because the Bond stuff is speculation. So Cold Hard Fact is that Transformers 5 is on its way. It starts filming in June.
That is such a cold fact.
It's a cold hard fact. It's an unavoidable fact. Death, taxes and more Transformers movies. That's all we face. So Transformers 5 is now going to be called Transformers... The Last Night.
Night with a K.
Night with a K.
Yeah, not like What Happened Last Night or something.
No, okay. Although that would be amazing. A sort of rom-com, raunchy rom-com with Optimus Prime and Megatron. Desperately trying to put together the pieces of Last... They wake up in the same bed.
No.
No, okay.
So The Last Night.
Transformers 5.
Transformers
The Last
5.
Night.
It's happening.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say.
But I guess I'm going to blow you away with some information.
Please do.
So obviously, you know, Mark Wahlberg is back as his character.
Cade Yeager, wasn't it?
Was it?
I think it was Cade Yeager.
Cade Yeager. That's amazing.
Yeager, presumably named for Chuck Yeager, who first broke the sign barrier.
Yes.
But the Cade, I don't know what that is.
Barricade.
It's his full name.
His full name is Barry Cade.
Cade Yeager, how did you know that?
Because it's a ridiculous name and it stuck in my head.
That's amazing. So, yes, he's back. And this week it was confirmed that Josh Duhamel, who sat the last one out, will be returning as Lieutenant Colonel Lennox.
Yes.
Finally, we're five movies in and we finally learned this guy's name. That's pretty astonishing, don't you think? But I thought the fourth movie really could have done with some of Lieutenant Colonel Lennox. I thought, yeah, it needed an injection of whatever it is he brings to that franchise.
Handsome soldieriness? I'm not sure.
Yes, indeed. It's all very
exciting. Will anyone else be back? Like, was it Tyrese be back to bring the rain?
There is no word yet of Tyrese coming back as Kevin Soldier. Or whatever his character's called in that series. I don't know. Jack Rayner doesn't seem to be back as Shane Dyson from the last movie. And of course, we're all in tenterhooks, so we'll see whether Nicola Peltz will return as Tessie Yeager. Which is...
Is that a wife or a daughter?
Daughter.
I missed the fourth one.
Yeah, oh, there was a...
Yes, I missed it.
There was a horrendous subplot where all the way through the movie, Mark Wahlberg's desperately trying to stop Jack Rayner and his daughter from being together. And then at one point, because she's underage technically, isn't this right? And then Jack Rayner's character pulls out a
laminated copy
of a statute,
the Romeo and Juliet statute,
which means that they can your law stuff.
It means that they can get it on, as I believe the kids say, even though she is underage, because he was once underage too, essentially, when they started dating.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So. It's an exception.
So he had a birthday and she hadn't had a birthday yet.
Exactly, kind of thing, yeah.
Okay.
This is a subplot of this movie.
It's really...
A genuine subplot of this film.
It's quite creepy.
Maybe. I mean, I actually genuinely thought that he was going to be 10 years older and it was going to be horribly creepy, but...
No, he's like 2 or 3 years older. It's not quite that much of a...
How long have they been dating?
I honestly...
So he was what, 15 and she was 11?
Oh, no, I hope not. Oh, no.
That's what you said, 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, I don't remember exactly.
I need to know these details.
Maybe he was 16 and she was 13.
Ew.
That's still 14. Too much.
But no, when they started dating.
But 16's okay,
he's
right?
He's meant to have graduated. I think she's meant to be like 17. He's meant to be just 19 or something.
Well, I don't know the age laws
exactly.
In America. They might be different.
They vary from state to state also.
Right.
This is all getting gross.
We've
let's
gone down
on.
A dark cul-de-sac here, yeah, and I'm uncomfortable with it. I'm going
so
to back
who else
out.
Who else is back, Chris?
I don't know, Helen.
Right.
I don't know. All I know is that Josh Duhamel's in it, and that's all I need to know.
That's all I need to know.
I would be lining up.
And Optimus Prime?
Optimus Prime's back, of course. Optimus Prime's back.
Great, the Dinobot's
riding
back.
Riding a dinosaur?
Well, what he does in his private life is none of my concern.
Okay.
So fingers crossed that Optimus Prime is back, because we all love Optimus Prime. So this we talked about this.
Yeah, this franchise could be great. It just isn't.
It could
but like
be great.
It has the potential and all. You know, everything that went on in the comic books. There is some really good stuff here that they just don't tap into at all.
And there have been some beautiful effects work and chase scenes and action beats in this franchise. I stand by that. That freeway scene in the first one was absolutely terrific. I think some of the work that ILM did in the second one, even in the fight in the forest, was amazing.
The forest is great.
There's a supercut online which is just like I don't know if it's Optimus transforming or general Transformers transforming, and it's gorgeous. The one where he drives out the back of the cargo plane, transforms into Optimus midair, transforms back into the truck as he lands and then drives off. It's just cool, you know. But
yeah, I like the first one. I do like the first one.
I like the first one a lot.
But the problem with the franchise is, first one's fine, and then there are three terrible movies that follow, and then they diminish any excitement for the fifth one. But you know.
But now that Lennox is back.
Now that and presumably he's gone promotion. Lieutenant Colonel.
He's pretty senior now. Yeah.
Unless that's like a gun style, his actual name.
Like major.
I'm excited either way. And speaking of badass names, so last night we had a Q&A with Shane Black and Joel Silver for The Nice Guys, which will become a podcast special. If you couldn't make it, don't worry about it. We will turn it into a podcast special, which will be out the week of release, June 3rd, thereabouts. And Shane Black revealed exclusively to me and 180 people that, and the thousands of people listen to the podcast subsequently, that the hero of his next movie, which is The Predator, which is a sort of sequel to the Predator movies, not a reboot, I think it's a sequel, is going to be called Quinn McKenna. Which explains my nonsense at the beginning of the podcast. Quinn McKenna.
That's a solid name.
That is a name dripping in testosterone.
Unlike most Shane Black characters, who are, of course, shy and retiring men, barely tinged with testosterone.
Well, yeah, but yeah, not Ryan Gosling in The Nice Guys, for example, is not dripping in testosterone, I would say.
No. But, maybe oozing, but not dripping.
There is oozing. There is. Yeah. Anyway, that's a cool name. That's a cool name. So I'm excited about that. So
me too.
Just want to talk about that. A couple of things that broke last week in Time Honor Tradition. A minute that we put the podcast up, Hollywood goes, right, announced big movie news. So Trainspotting 2 started filming this week. Very excited about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's going to come out next January, so they're going to really get a move on with that one.
How will they get the effects work done in time?
Yeah.
Well, Danny Boyle was worried for a few years. The reason he kept giving for not having made a sequel already was that the cast refused to age. Like, they were just, they still looked awfully, awfully good, given the characters' lives in the story.
Although Renton surely would have, you know, we see Renton turning his back in the whole thing.
He chooses life, exactly. Yeah. So he has an excuse for baby soft skin, but the rest of them, no excuse. So I think he was... you know, there may be some effects work to just make them look like 40-somethings.
Maybe. We shall see. But what's interesting about this is that, most of the original cast are back, and there was a kind of pre-shooting trailer thing that was released this week, and it said the original cast returns. Obviously, Kevin McKidd doesn't, because Tommy, his character, not to give away too much, but he dies. But interestingly, Kelly MacDonald's Diane does not seem to be back, and for me, that was a huge part. I mean, I think there's the core four is still, you know, Sick Boy, Spud, Begbie, and Renton, but she was a big part of the original movie, and to not have her back feels. a bit strange to me, but I'm
maybe
sure
they
I think it's sad because, I mean, story wise, you can't really see why she would be there because she was there very
the
much.
That's the problem, isn't it?
But she has the world's most beautiful voice. It's just so lovely. I could listen to that voice. When she's got an advert for, I'm going to say, at some sort of bank. I love those adverts just because she's talking over them.
Is that the one where we go?
Yeah, those. Those.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't she have a lovely voice?
I don't know the name of the bank, but yeah, she does have a lovely voice. She's got a lovely voice. And David Morrissey's got a good voice. He does Santander.
Okay.
Should we talk about Trainspotting 2 again? I don't know. What am I doing today?
I'm excited. It will give, you know, the young people of nowadays something to put up on their walls of their student accommodation, which is terrific. Did we all have a Trainspotting poster, or was it just me?
Of course we did. I was at school. Yeah.
I didn't.
Wow.
I had.
You rebel.
Yeah.
I was given away with a magazine.
Yeah,
it was
that's
certainly
possible.
Folded out. So maybe it was this very magazine.
Could have been
something grottier.
No, I was unique in my tastes. I had a poster of Kurt Cobain on my wall. Nobody had that at university, let me tell you this. I had a poster of Mulder and Scully on my wall at university. Nobody had that, let me tell you that. And I had many posters of Sandra Bullock.
I had Mars Attacks. I don't know why. I liked it. It was a cool poster. Anyway, we should probably move on
before we embarrass
ourselves and danger ourselves any further.
But it's interesting. I don't think this movie, it will be aimed at teens anymore, will it?
No, I'm not saying it is, but I'm not necessarily sure it was to begin with. And they're calling it T2.
They are calling it T2.
Which is a thing that is...
They're not going to do that, are they? They're not. I mean, they're saying that now. They're not actually going to do that. That would be ridiculous.
Yeah, you're probably right. All right, let's move on.
Well, that's what it seems to be called at the moment. And officially, Terminator 2 is called Terminator 2 Judgment Day. It's not called T2. So you could, in theory, get away with it.
Yeah, but for 25 years, we've all been calling it T2. So,
yeah.
You know.
I don't know. Who knows? We shall see. But best of luck to them on that one.
Definitely.
Very excited about that. And in other news that broke last week, yes, it's more Marvel news. Sorry for people who don't like Marvel news. But Black Panther is shaping up to be an incredibly exciting movie over at Marvel. Launches in February 2018. Obviously, Chadwick Boseman was introduced in Civil War. We all liked him. And now the cast is coming together. As Kevin Feige said on the Empire podcast himself, he said that the cast will be 90% African and African-American. And so far, true to their word, because last week it was announced that the Peter Nyong'o is in talks to join the cast, and then Ryan Coogler is the writer and director. We all hoped at some point that Michael B. Jordan would pop up, and it looks as if he will be.
Yeah, so, and then the latest thing was rumours yesterday that John Boyega could also be joining the family. This is still at the rumour stage at the moment, but my God, so much charisma on one single movie set. That's insane. So fingers crossed that happens as well, because that would be amazing.
No real word on who they're playing yet, but and it feels wrong to just simply say that Peter Nyong'o would be a love interest, but that's what has been rumoured, that she'll certainly be someone at Black Panther that T'Challa is involved with or may be involved with, and Michael B. Jordan may be the bad guy. That's what we're hearing at the moment. So, or one of the bad guys, because the 10% of the cast is not African or African American. I would imagine will contain Andy Serkis, whose character Ulysses Claw is very much a Black Panther villain, set up obviously in Age of Ultron. Martin Freeman as Everett K. Ross.
Yep.
Although he's not in any way affiliated with Black Panther in Civil War, but he is in
the
comic
books. Share one scene.
Yeah. So. And I don't even think they exchange dialogue, do they, any point?
They don't.
And I wouldn't be at all surprised if Sebastian Stan turns up.
So that's three there. So that means the cast is 30 people big. So you need to find.
There may be more.
And hopefully the likes of Florence Kasimba will come back, because she had one line in Civil War and threatened to steal the movie. So, you know,
she did,
we want
some
more of her, please.
Florence Kasimba as one of Black Panther's bodyguards. So very, very excited about that. Ryan Coogler, I think that man's awesome. So, fingers crossed. And I've written down here, Gareth Edwards has left Godzilla 2 to do something else, I presume.
So. Well, as long as he's kept busy, I think that's the important thing. We want him making movies. And I'm okay if he doesn't make Godzilla 2.
I'm more than happy for him not to make Godzilla 2. I'm more than happy for him not to go down that route of just being the big blockbuster guy. He's got more on his mind, I think, than that. But yeah, Godzilla 2 is obviously coming in 2019, and then they've rather optimistically announced Godzilla vs. Kong for 2020. Obviously, Kong will reappear in Kong Skull Island before being used as either a toothpick or a Q-tip or some sort of suppository by Godzilla in Godzilla vs. King Kong. They're going to have to rectify the differential there.
The size discrepancy is enormous right now.
It's huge.
Or it isn't.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. But anyway... So this week the Ghostbusters had a second trailer which seemed to go down a little bit better with the internet, apart from of course a certain subsection of the internet.
Helen mostly.
Hey, I liked
Helen
it.
Helen hates this film.
Yeah, I hate those female leads.
You've long been campaigning against women in Hollywood.
Absolutely. I just like to sit at home and wear my fedora and slag off women.
I just like to sit at home in my torn purple pants.
And I like to watch.
So what did we like the trailer? Did we think this one was better?
I thought this one was fun. I didn't hate the first one, but it didn't set my world alight either, but I thought this one looked a little bit more fun and had a little bit more life to it. And then the thing is, I think it's not always the case, but there is often an inverse correlation between the funniness of a comedy movie and the funniness of its trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not ever that worried when a comedy has just okay trailers. If anything, I take some comfort from it. It's like, okay, well, I'm not hopefully not seeing all the best jokes in this one trailer. And I feel like that's probably what's happening here. I think a lot of the humor of the film hopefully will come from the characters, the interplay between them, and will sort of build over the course of the film, which makes a trailer very hard to cut but leads to a better movie. So that's kind of how I'm feeling about that at the moment.
What I liked about the trailer was it gave Kristen Wiig something funny to do. There's a moment where she has a bit of a meltdown. I thought that was good, because how do you have someone that funny? And in the first trailer they were hiding her comedy light under a bushel. Fingers crossed for this one.
I also agree that it's fingers crossed for this one.
Excellent.
Terry White, our editor, she pointed out something very interesting to me, which was she showed me the original 1984 Ghostbusters trailer, where also a lot of the very funny lines don't really land.
Yeah.
And that is, again, because of the characters.
Exactly.
You know, it comes from, you know, loving those characters and getting to know them, and that's why the film is so good and has endured, and hopefully this one will be the same. I'm terrifically excited to see it, and in fact that's not, we've seen two trailers, but we've also seen that focus on this, on the receptionist behind the scenes, but with clips as well, and that looks very funny.
It did, actually. It really does. I think that the problem I have with this film is nothing to do with this film. The problem I have is that certain segments of the population and also of Hollywood are going to, unless this film makes over $1 billion and gets about 96% positive reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, there is a segment of the world that is going to say, this proves that you shouldn't ever try and gender swap anything. And so I feel like it's been landed with these very unfair expectations and these unfair demands on it. And all we actually need it to be is a good comedy. And that should be all we're trying to hope for from it. But yeah, it's landed in the unfortunate position of being a bit of a trailblazer, and I don't think it necessarily benefits from that as a film. Anyway,
absolutely. Okay, so that's there's a couple of other things very, very quickly to just go through. One is that Warner Brothers has restructured its DC Films subdivision. So everyone's been saying for a long time, actually, not just since Batman Superman, but that they need a focal point. They need a figurehead. They need a Feige, quite frankly, Kevin Feige. So Warner Brothers have responded to that. And so last night they announced that John Berg and Geoff Johns, who's been involved with the TV stuff over at DC and obviously is a comic book writer as well, a big shot over at DC. In fact, he's a CCO of DC. They'll be actually co-running the DC Films banner. In the two heads are better than one kind of situation. Hopefully it's not a Sherrod Hulia, Roy Evans type situation, but actually something that's productive and will lead to good films for the DC slate.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And there was news of a potential spin-off already from Suicide Squad, with Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn leading a kind of female-focused DC characters kind of story. She's apparently, she fell so much in love with the character that she's apparently been working with an so far unnamed comic book writer, but I have suspicions about who that might be, on putting together a story which would feature the likes of basically the Birds of Prey, of Batgirl, of Poison Ivy, of you name it, good guys, bad guys, I'm not quite sure, but it sounds kind of intriguing because Harley Quinn is the one thing everybody agrees, all the advance word on Suicide Squad has been that she is great as that character, so fingers crossed that she will make enough of an impact when that hits screens that this becomes an obvious idea to do.
Yarp. And obviously that's a shared universe. Everything's a shared universe these days. And the very last thing is that today brought word that Universal Pictures are teaming up with Dwayne Johnson and James Vanderbilt, who wrote The Amazing Spider-Man and Zodiac, to launch the Robert Ludlum movie universe. I mean,
and not before time.
Yeah, I've been crying out for this for a long, long time, as you guys know. So they'll start off with a movie called The Janssen Directive, which Johnson's been attached to for years, apparently, as it turns out. And they may even look at the idea of incorporating the Bourne films into this as well. So, you know, not everything needs to be a shared universe. Let's just have standalone movies now and again, once in a while. It's fine. I think it's fine. But it is The Rock's attempt to be in everything. And he really is, I think. Because weirdly enough, he doesn't, even though he was called Franchise Viagra by us a few years ago. How many franchises does he actually have that are his, that he doesn't just go into and join something?
Well, I guess he's hoping to start one with Baywatch, perhaps.
Starting with Baywatch,
there's
maybe Central Intelligence.
Doc Savage, maybe, as well.
Yeah. But
so loads.
Yeah. And obviously he's attached to the DC Universe, but,
yeah,
you know, it's all very much at the prospective stage at the moment, so fingers crossed. But Robert Ludlum shared universe. I wonder if that's a step too far. Anyway, that's it for the news. Time now for a guest. This week's guest is a former musician. He was with the Irish band The Frames back in the early 90s. Then he became a director, the likes of Once, you'll know that film, Begin Again, which was, of course, much more interestingly titled kind of Song Save Your Life, and then they changed it. What's going on with that? This week he delivers yet another cracking musical with Sing Street. He is, of course, John Carney, and we sent Phil Desimnian along this week to speak to him. Enjoy.
We are thrilled and delighted to be joined by John Carney on the Empire podcast today.
Nice to be here.
Thank you so much for coming in. Now, we like to be a bit objective about, because we review films on the podcast, but we like to be a bit objective when it comes to the interviews, because we are pretending to be professional journalists. But there is so much love for this movie that you've made, Sing Street, and it must give you the warm glowings, surely, or does it get a bit like...
enough loving. No, maybe that's what we do as filmmakers, in a sense, without getting too pretentious, you know, is look for love and look for, you know, there have been moments where where you look through to try and find the negative review when you get a synopsis of reviews, because this has been favorably reviewed. Once was obviously very favorably reviewed, and I find myself now scanning my phone for the negative review. Yeah, so in one sense, you know, that's kind of an interesting idea of, like, let's find the person who doesn't love me here.
It's a sort of a Woody Allen construct, I think, somewhere it will play there. What's the meanest thing anyone said about this film?
It's hard to find a negative tweet about it, if that's tweeting is the apparently a big thing at the moment. So I got a Twitter account and set it up and have been looking at them. It's like one in 500 or 600 somebody says something not even nasty, but just "this wasn't for me" is the most offensive. It's an amazing film. I think it's because it's about kids coming up in the world and trying to make their way in a grey, depressing 80s setting, and they're young, beautiful looking children, and you'd kind of be a bit of a pervert to kick it. It'd be like kicking the puppy that's just lapping at everybody, yes. You know, and I'll give it a kick. So yes. Everybody is being very, very nice to this film. It has to be
stay safe. On Twitter a bit longer, John, and you will discover the puppy kicking is a thing.
That's probably true, actually. Unless somebody's censoring my Twitter feed into just all the positive ones. Can they do that?
You have a team of people with you now. No, this is not true. John's on his own. But, you know, yeah, censoring, just telling you what you want to hear. We should put the film into some context, having praised it in sort of slightly oblique way.
Because nobody knows what we're talking about.
No, I know. It's just terrible interviewing, isn't it? Really bad. Sing Street is the name of the school that you went to. And there's a lot of autobiographical detail in the story of Connor, who wants to woo a girl, and he has to put a band together, Blues Brothers style.
True. But let's put it in more context, though. Let's say that what I found was I'd be walking around London or New York or Dublin, and I'd be looking at people and I'd go, God, there's a lot of people my age. Like, there's a lot of people vaguely thinning of hair and protruding of belly, and you know, that era that I recognize, okay, I'm there now, I'm at that. And nobody, there's nothing for them. There's nothing, like the internet's there, this open world zone of you can have anything you want. You can download whatever, you can listen to anything.
Mm.
Really, what we need at my age is we need a curator. We need people, we grew up with the BBC telling us, tonight on BBC, Ingmar Bergman series continues with, we were told what to watch and the BBC showed us great stuff and we were curated. And likewise in Ireland, we come from a generation where we like that and newspapers that we read were edited and we're lost now. Because the internet's come along and we don't know where, I find personally, I just don't know where. Yes, you can download every 80s track on YouTube and you can have an 80s night every night of your life, but there's nobody to tell you to do it. So it felt to me like this movie, Sing Street, is a movie set in the 80s. It's about kids forming a school band and it's full of 80s tunes and some new tunes that have been written for the film. And it's been, what really amazes me is the amount of 40-something-year-olds that I've met that have like, oh, thanks for this movie. This is a blast. This told me where to look for an hour and a half.
Yes.
And I think that that's what people are responding to in the film is like, is a nostalgic thing and a sense of like, oh, that decade is far enough now in the rearview mirror for it not to be a horror film of my own upbringing. it's now nostalgia, you know, now it's far enough away for us to have a laugh about it. And had I made this film in the 90s, I'd be like, no, it's too close. I remember that girl spurning me. I remember that school bully hitting me. It's too fresh. The wound is still open. But now the wound is closed and we can actually look back and go, God, it was kind of a brilliant decade in a sense.
It was. You're going to get asked a lot about how much of this is your life, you know, how much of Connor is John Carney and how much isn't. There's lovely details. There's one particular pair of brown shoes that you are wearing brown shoes. Amazing.
That's so that's I've always worn brown shoes. Yeah.
Okay. So to put that into context, Connor is made to walk barefoot because he's supposed to wear black shoes to school, but he can't afford them. He doesn't have any.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that
episode? There's episodes in this movie that happened to me, and then those episodes led to further revelations about what the film wanted to be itself. Like the film does want to be its own thing, so
yes.
there are episodes that I definitely took from my own life that I re-dramatized and put me as the hero of.
Did you create any music videos on that?
Yeah, we shot a lot of music videos. We stole the school camcorder.
Did you?
And there's a scene that I did. I actually have them stealing the video camera in the film, and we edited it out in the end. I'm not sure why we edited it out, but we probably shouldn't have. But it justifies the source of the video camera.
Yes.
You know, which is not an easy thing to get back then.
No.
In the 80s, having kids who had a video camera were weird. They were rich kids. You know, they were like, how does he have a video camera?
It's something as an audience member now you just sort of take for granted, though.
Seemed like I didn't. And I had this very elaborate scene. It was quite funny where they bunk into the school and they get this set of keys and they go and it's a big, like, sort of, you know, big sort of break-in sequence. And then I think we had a piece of music from like Beverly Hills Cop play it out as the camera craned up and they ran off with their booty.
Right.
You know, and it was a real like punch the air moment. But it just didn't seem to need it in the film, as it turns out.
But you've got some deleted scenes that are basically action-packed.
Yeah, action-packed.
To look forward to on the DVD release. Bono specifically, but you two were involved in this from the get-go. Yeah. It's Cannes this week, and it was Cannes 2 years ago that your film got picked up by the Weinstein Company, wasn't it? And at that point, Bono, the U2 involvement was more then than it sort of turned out to be. Was that just a timing thing?
They were really helpful. Bono and Edge particularly were very helpful at the beginning of the film in terms of just, it's hard to describe what they did for it. They sort of kind of like rubber stamped it. It was like, if you're going to make a film about a band in school in Ireland, you kind of have to ask those guys, are we off the track? And I think they sort of authenticated the movie for me. That was the big brother sort of thing of like, yeah, this is funny and this is okay. You know, you're not off your head thinking that this will work.
Yes.
And it seemed like it would be crazy to completely avoid just ringing those guys up and saying, look, you know, you formed a band in the late 70s in Dublin. Is this kind of what it was like? And I remember telling Bono and Edge the story of, you know, him lying about the school band, which is how my movie opens with this big bluff about being in this band. And they both pissed themselves laughing at that scene. So I was like, okay, that's why all people form bands. That everybody forms a band to get a partner.
They've actually said, Bono's actually said that you two weren't as good as these kids.
Well, that was an amazing quote.
I mean, wow, that's pretty cool.
That was great. And actually, he's being very generous, I think. What he's really saying is that you sped up the timeline in order to make it fun. And actually, the important thing about this film is that it's not about a bad band. It's about a good band.
Yes.
And that's what people miss. Whenever anybody says to me, oh, they're too good too quick, I'm like, well, they're supposed to be a good band.
They are really good.
So do you want to watch a film for an hour and a half of bad music?
Yes.
Because I don't, because there's enough bad music on YouTube of young bands, kind of, and you're like, you're never going to do it, or this is not good to listen to. So to add to that.
They're not a covers band either, as people that are trying to parallel your film with The Commitments.
Oh, please. I know, it's such lazy journalism. It's like, oh, it must be like The Commitments. It's like The Commitments in as much as The Big Sleep is like The Big Lebowski. I mean, they're both detective movies set in Hollywood.
With the word big in the title.
With the word big in the title. And they're both joking, they're both from the same source material, i.e. music, but that, they're like, there's no comparison between The Commitments and Sing Street, other than it's a musical and it's set in Ireland.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's exactly, you're right, the band and The Commitments. And I love The Commitments. Commitments, great script, incredibly funny, and really, I love the casting in it and all that. I just wouldn't see them as being, you liked The Commitments, therefore you like Sing Street. I think that that's phony. There's no reason to think that people who like The Commitments will like... Like, Commitments is a bawdy, outrageous, rude, dirty-mouthed Irish comedy.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious. The Sing Street is much more John Hughes-y, and there's not a bad word in it. I think there's one curse word in the entire film, which is already shows you just how much of a fantasy film this is. Because Dublin kids do not say flip and feck and bigara. They say cunt, fuck, shit, wank, gee.
Yeah.
Just to, yeah. I'm trying to get as many in there as I can.
No,
they don't fuck around with their language. And in my film, nobody curses.
Yeah.
Because we wanted the film to pass the ratings. We wanted to get on and, you know, do some business and all that. So in a sense, you know, even there, the distinctions between it and The Commitments just are, you know, just announce themselves.
Yeah. Not a single bagora the entire
Not a
movie.
Bagora,
yeah. Or your money back.
Yeah.
You've come to a temple of lazy journalism, as chance would have it.
Really, you're pretty much.
Well,
I'm enjoying this.
We've done some unusual things down the years on the Empire podcast, including trying to film a Terrence Malick homage at Comic-Con. If we were to ever record a song about what we do, which is basically sit around and talk nonsense about movies every Friday, how would we go? None of us really have any musical ability.
Yeah.
Where would we start that process? I'm not asking you to write us a song. I'm just looking for some tips.
I'm trying to think of bad bands in the 80s that got through. In a sense, I have to say, like, Duran Duran were a funny band in that they weren't great. But they somehow managed to pull it off through just sheer perseverance and fun and good looks and life.
Let's say we don't have those things.
Yeah. We have to have something.
We complain a lot about Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull. That's one of the things we do.
You moan.
We also review films, and we give films 3 stars. We have to point out that 3 stars is a recommendation. So that's another thing that we tend to sort of comes up quite a lot.
Oh, you don't do 5 stars?
We give films 5 stars, but I think that's...
I'd love to know what Sing Street gets now.
Sing Street's got... Do you want to know what Sing Street's
got?
Yeah,
go on.
All of your films have got 4 stars.
Yes.
So that's obviously a recommendation.
That's
we wouldn't have to say that.
Recommendation.
But sometimes people think if it's 3 stars... What does that mean? Is that good or should we go see it?
Yeah, 3 stars would be good for me. I'd be happy with 3 stars, yeah.
So would we be looking for a word that rhymes with, say, recommendation to get into the song?
You could try that. I'm not going to try it because I'm the worst lyricist in the world, but you could get Gary Clark to try and write a lyric for you.
Gary Clark, who wrote Drive It Like You Stole It, which is on my iPhone on the way into work most mornings. It's a great track.
Can you imagine being the director of a film who's made, like, Falling Slowly has been in my film, Lost Stars has been nominated for an Oscar, making a third film, you're like, oh God, I have to get a hit song.
Yeah.
Who do I know? Who will I ring? Okay, well, I love Gary Clark. Can you imagine being that director and giving that brief? Oh, by the way, can you also write an Oscar-worthy song? Because I've had two of them. Just no big deal, but you know, if you could have that by Tuesday, and if it could sound a little bit like Maneater, Hall & Oates, it has to have some really good lyrics. Could you have that by 2 o'clock? And you get Drive It Like You Stole It.
Yes.
That's like asking for the one thing that you wanted at Christmas as a kid and getting it.
Yes.
And it being as good as you thought or better than you thought it would be. phenomenal song. And I remember getting the demo of it. Like, and Gary is a very humble man from Dundee. He's like, I think I have some. I'll send it through. Let me know what you think. And I'd be like, oh, that doesn't sound, he doesn't sound that enthusiastic. Listen to the song.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And I remember playing it to my niece, Clea, at the time and saying, I've listened to this song and you need to tell me whether I'm crazy or not, or you think it's a hit record or not. And I played it to her and she's like 8 bars into it.
Yeah.
She'd be like, why do you need me to listen to this?
Yeah.
This is, do you need me to tell you anything more than you already know about this song?
Yeah.
It's such
it gets
a great
better
tune.
Too. It's got the clap bit too, which I love. It's a great song. I've got to wrap up very shortly. I've just got a couple of quick fire questions for you. I wondered if Once has been homaged, I don't know if what the right word is for The Simpsons, on The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Is that a prouder moment for you than the Oscar nominations? Or
that
where
was
that stand?
Probably the proudest moment that I've had in my career.
Really?
Yeah. Absolutely. That was like Christopher Guest from Spinal Tap or something saying, I like your movie and I want to put it in Spinal Tap and re-edit Spinal Tap to put a scene about Once in it.
Yes.
The Simpsons parodying.
No, I get
Once.
That. That makes sense.
Insane.
True or false, Bono told you not to invest your money in the Once musical.
He told Glenn that, and he told it more as a sort of an, you know, this is the wise man's sort of advice, which is very true. You don't pay for your own stuff to be made.
Yes,
you get somebody else to pay for it. And part of that process is quality control. You know, because if Steven Spielberg paid for all his own movies, they wouldn't be Jaws, and they wouldn't, because he's got to raise that money, so he's got to go through these quality control. He's got to convince 10 other guys who don't want to part with their money to give him money. That can make films very, very good. You know, that's the hope.
If Sing Street does become a successful movie and go on to become a successful, would you look at investing in that case?
Yes, I have already. Yeah, would I ignore Bono?
Yes, that's my question.
No, well, I mean, I think it's important to distinguish between the, I mean, look, if anybody wants to come and give me loads of money to make this into a musical, I'm not gonna.
Has anyone come up to you at this point?
There's been a few offers.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That would be amazing. And very lastly, you've been linked with a film that's very different from, and to remind listeners, you've been making films since before Once, obviously.
Yes.
Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. Which is a Roger Ebert, Russ Meyer story. Is that something that you're going to be doing? Or?
Yeah, hopefully, if we can work it all out, I would love to do that film. That's a hilarious script by Chris Clues, who wrote for The Simpsons.
Yes.
Very, very funny script about this harebrained and yet weirdly successful collaboration between Roger Ebert and Russ Meyer in 1969 in America. It's a story of outsiders in Hollywood, which is a story I know a lot about.
Yes. Looking forward. I hope that happens. That would be awesome.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Very different as well, which would be nice to see. John, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Real pleasure.
Cheers.
John Carney there. And you know what? Usually we start the review section with the big film of the week, as in the big blockbuster. Should we start with Sing Street?
Yay!
Let's start with Sing Street.
Yay!
Yay!
I've not seen
that
it.
Concludes our review.
That's pretty much, I think you can, that's all you need to know.
This actually has been out, it came out in Ireland on St. Paddy's Day, so it's actually been out for a couple of months back home. And I went to see it with my family. And
how's Roisin?
Everybody loved it. There is no Roisin in my family. Are you crazy man?
That's Paddy okay?
Also no.
No?
No, still no. There's a Seamus.
A Seamus.
There you go.
That was my next one.
Yeah, and a Maeve. Anyway, so we all went to see Sing Street and literally everybody loved it because this is an utterly charming film. It's sort of about being a teenager and being young and being in a band, but like that doesn't matter so much basically. Anyway, okay, so it's the 1980s and our hero is a 14-year-old called Connor, who's played by Ferdia Walsh-Pillow, and he is taken out of the posh school where he has been contentedly working away. His parents, who are Aidan Gillen and Maria Doyle Kennedy, of course, of The Commitments, are basically facing splitting up, or they're talking about separation. Money is tight, so they put him in the local Christian Brothers school instead, Sing Street, which is where Carney himself went. And he keeps seeing this girl across the road from the school, Rufina, who's played by Lucy Boynton. And she says she's a model. So he tells her that he's in a band and they need a model for their music video. He isn't in a band and they don't have a music video at the time. But he quickly forms one and gets songwriting and gets her to star in the video. And then they keep writing songs, basically. And It's absolutely, it's just a really, really charming film. Jack Rayner plays his older brother, Brendan, who basically keeps introducing him to new kinds of music. And every time he discovers a new kind of music, he completely changes his look and the band's sound. So he discovers The Cure at one point, for example. You know, it's just, it's utterly, utterly charming in terms of finding your own sound, finding your own self, finding out who you want to be. And it's funny and smart, and the music is terrific, absolutely terrific. I'm not even a fan of 80s music, but this stuff is amazing. And the characters just come to life. Yeah, no, it is, but it's recognisably kind of 80s. It's just really good pop 80s. So I just, honestly, I think this was terrific. We gave it 4 stars. I would probably push that a little bit.
What?
Well, you know,
to a high 4 or to a 5?
To a very high 4 at the very, very least.
Wow.
It's a little film. It's not like, it doesn't take airs upon itself. So maybe, you know, maybe you need to grab airs if you're going to be a 5. But it's just so lovely. I just think it's wonderful.
Amazing.
Yeah. So definitely, Sing Street, honestly.
7 stars.
Check it out.
That? Who knew that? So yeah, so Rio, Town Called Malice, Maneater, Stepping Out.
Oh no, but their own songs as well.
Yeah, that's a hell of a soundtrack though.
Yeah,
and then their
is.
Own songs as well. Fantastic. Awesome. 4 stars.
Yeah.
4 stars then for Sing Street.
Very good.
Very, very good. And let's stay firmly in the 1980s now for the big budget blockbuster release of the week, which is X-Men : Apocalypse. Or is it just X-Men Apocalypse? There's no colon on the poster or in the title. It's just X-Men Apocalypse. So X-Men Apocalypse, which is obviously the return of Bryan Singer and the first class cast, I would say. So there's no Patrick Stewart or Hugh Jackman or Ian McKellen or Halle Berry this time around, as it was in Days of Future Past. So this is the X-Men tackling their greatest foe yet, a man in prosthetics. Helen.
Yeah, I did.
You wrote the Empire review of this.
Yeah.
Which is
overly positive.
There, you see what I'm dealing with, people.
A 2-star review.
It was a 2-star review. Yes, it was. I'm so sorry. It hurt me more than it hurt you. I'm a big X-Men fan. It's probably the one I've read more comics of than anything else. But this
read a comic,
is,
Helen. If you knew what happened in the comics, you wouldn't have given this 2 stars.
If
you could read a comic, you would have given it 10 stars.
If I could read a comic, I'd know that Mystique is not Katniss and she doesn't lead the X-Men. But fine.
Save it for the spoiler special, Helen.
That's just a comment. Anyway, so Oscar Isaac plays Apocalypse. You better enjoy the one shot you got of Oscar Isaac in the trailer, because that's all you're going to get of his face. Because he's overtaken by some terrible prosthetics back in the days of Stargate.
They didn't have good prosthetics back in the ancient times.
No.
And I think that explains a lot.
It does, yes. So anyway, he is betrayed and through a complicated series of events ends up asleep underground for 5,000-ish years.
So there's a prologue which is thousands of years ago.
It's Stargate as a little prologue to this film. And then he's asleep 5,000 years and he wakes up through some spectacular inattention by a supposed hero and decides, hang on, I'm not sure about this whole modern world business. I don't approve of all your democracy and weakness and having nuclear weapons.
Rubik's Cubes.
Hates what those. The heck is up with those? Television, don't think so.
Only 4 channels. What's going on?
So he decides to cleanse the world and take over. And to do that, he recruits some random mutants that have some powers, but not really the most powers for the most part, including a very good Storm, Alexander Shipp, including Olivia Munn as Psylocke, who looks cool, but for some reason doesn't get armor. She just gets thigh-high leather boots. I don't know.
I can explain all that in the spoiler special.
Oh, thanks so much. And also Magneto.
Well, I can you can have a stab explaining that in the spoiler special.
I feel like you probably can. Magneto, in the meantime, has gone away, retired to the country to raise chickens and also a family. So you can kind of guess what's going to happen to him. And also Apocalypse recruits Angel, who is, as ever in these films, a bit of a waste of space. Anyway, meanwhile, the X-Men haven't really moved on very much either. This is a film that plays occasional lip service to 20 years having passed since First Class and sometimes just ignores it completely. Professor X, James McAvoy, has formed a school, but not the X-Men, so he's still not particularly pulling the thumb out there. Hank McCoy is still, you know, pottering about downstairs and not doing very much else. Mm-hmm. And it takes Mystique turning up with the delightful new Nightcrawler, Cody Smith-McPhee, to tell them, hey, something's going on here you might need to worry about.
Okay.
Right? Sort of?
That's it.
I don't want to, go that. I don't want to go too far down the line, but there's a whole lot of unconnected scenes in the early part of this movie to all set right. everybody up.
So that's the plot. That's the plot. Helen, why did you give this film 2 stars?
I gave this film 2 stars because I don't think it works particularly well. I think that the dialogue is pretty dreadful on quite a number of occasions. I think their attitude to the characters is inconsistent and fails to show much kind of forward movement for a lot of the people that we know already. I think they're better with the new characters that are being introduced, the likes of Ty Sheridan as Cyclops and Sophie Turner as Jean Grey is okay. I just feel like they haven't moved things forward, and I think you should be moving these things forward, because the X-Men, if it's about anything, is about evolution, and there is no sign of any evolution here. If anything, we're going backwards. I think Apocalypse doesn't work as a bad guy. He doesn't have a very clearly defined end game that he wants to do. You can tell he wants to destroy things, but you're not sure why or what he's trying to get at or what his purpose is in life. He just goes around recruiting these people who stand around him like backing singers in a boy band while he's being Gary Barlow at the front, and nobody is that threatened by Gary Barlow.
He's not Gary Barlow. He's Shane from Westlife.
That's damning.
That's what he is. That's he's really not even the lead damning. Singer.
That's really damning.
What's going on? Anyway.
Yeah, it didn't ever hang together for me, and it has one of those gigantic, oh look, we've destroyed a city and everything is rubble endings that just has no human weight to it. And
save for the spoiler special.
I'm not saying anything more than that about the ending, but like, okay. You need human weight. You need to feel
you need human waste. Well, I was going, what's going? What sort of movie do you want?
I mean, that would be a whole other movie. Mm. But you do need kind of you need some kind of emotion and some empathy and some stakes, and this one ultimately I didn't think had those things.
So that would be X-Men Apocalypse for you.
You're sticking with the human waste then?
I am going with it. I've latched onto it and I'm riding this train until it gets off this final stop. Johnny, what did you think of it? You think 2 is a bit generous?
No, I think 2 is fine. I was being glib, as is my way. there was so much I didn't like in it, and there were so many repeated beats that were noticeably worse than the ones that had gone before. So there's a very quick scene with a character. I can say that.
Yeah, you can. Yeah,
it's not a spoiler, right? That Quicksilver's quick, right?
No, it's not a spoiler. It's fine.
Quicksilver does another save the day, I'm very fast scene, but it's noticeably worse than the one in Days of the Future Past, and this just keeps on happening all the way through it. Like, there are scenes where you're like, oh, I've seen this before, but better. I wish I was watching that movie. In fact, that's what Helen ends her review with, saying, you know, it just feels like a pale imitation of so many things that have gone before, and it's such a shame. Because we were excited about it. We were really excited about this film. Everyone went to it. Everyone took that Friday afternoon to go and wanted to see it and, you know, clamouring to see it. And we sat down and we came out and there was just like no one really knew what to say to each other. Everyone was like, did everyone not like that? Because I didn't like it, did you? And then suddenly it became apparent that we had seen what we thought we witnessed.
And it wasn't just some mind game.
Yeah.
Okay, so 2 stars in for X-Men Apocalypse. I've seen it a couple of times now.
It did improve slightly on the second viewing, I will say that. But I don't think you can't fold that into a review.
No, you can't.
A review
you absolutely
has to be
can't.
For people who see it once.
Precisely.
But all the same problems are still there. I think just knowing that they were coming made them slightly more palatable. That's how I felt on the second viewing.
Performances are good, though, I think, still across the board.
Performances are fine. Some of the characterisation I did have a problem with. The way that Jean Grey is introduced, for example, makes her seem not shy, not hesitant, but just really bitchy, for example. And that's not what that character is to me. So that, for example, stood out. But there are great, great moments in it. I think Cody Smith-McPhee's Nightcrawler is honestly one of my favourite characters of the year. I thought he was just wonderful. And his costume is incredible. You know, just his street clothes. Amazing.
I think McAvoy and Fassbender. They're still a slightly different movie to everyone else. The intensity of their performances are noticeably different from most other actors in the movie. But
and you can't do the just kiss already scenes so much with them. They don't get so many one-on-one FaceTime.
No,
Zooms.
This keeps Charles and Eric. I almost every time say Charles and Eddie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would I lie to you? Oh, no, you can't. I'm a telepath. It's impossible. Yeah, Charles and Eric, it does keep my part for a lot of the film. But we will get into this in great depth with interviews from Bryan Singer and Simon Kinberg, spilling on quite a lot of the plot as well in our spoiler special. So we're recording it next week. As I said before, if you have any questions for us, any thoughts, any comments once you see the film, do send them along to us via podcast. And also, and this is controversial, but my DMs are open on Twitter. So my personal Twitter is open to DMs.
What?
Yes. This is something I've done this now for a couple of weeks, and everyone has been very gracious. I haven't had anyone call me a C-unit, and I haven't had any penises sent to me. So, you know, come on.
So what you want?
Sort your game out, Twitter. So if you have questions, then you can contact me at Chris Hewitt via DM as well. If you are nasty, I will block you, because I have feelings too. 2 stars in for X-Men Apocalypse. And the final film this week is A Hologram for the King, the new film from Tom Tickfer. What's mm-hmm. Tickfer to be with? And starring from Spies Like Us. What's it? Spies, mm-hmm. It's a Spies Like Us reference.
Okay.
And Tom Hanks.
Yeah, Tom Hanks is Alan Clay. He's a washed-up salesman who somehow his company send him out to try and land a huge contract in Saudi Arabia. It's because many years before he told a joke in a public bathroom, and the nephew of the king heard it and liked that joke, and so he has an in. So off he goes to sell this, and he arrives and things go badly. He oversleeps on the first day, so misses his transport to the conference centre, which is where they're building the city, mm-hmm. which is an hour away. So he arrives at the conferencing centre where the city is going to be built, and his team are there, but there's no Wi-Fi, there's nowhere to sit really, there's no food, and it's his job to sort that, which he spectacularly fails to do. And also he has a rather large lump, maybe the size of 3 knuckles together, growing out of his back, which of course he at some one point tries to cut out himself. He's in a bad place, is this man, and this story is about him going to an unfamiliar country and not dealing with it very well to begin with, and then starting to, you know, get a handle on it and get his life back together, yeah. Which seems very familiar, and certainly when I was watching it, it felt very familiar to Lost in Translation, just with a different aging actor and a different locale. And I think the sad thing about this is, more than anything, is if you do compare those two films, which I don't think is too much of a stretch, this one comes off worse. Mm. It's not as good, and Tom Hanks is very charming in it, and he is a very watchable presence on screen, but I actually think he's miscast in the role, because he never really, because he's Tom Hanks, and you're like, oh, there's Tom Hanks being charming. He never really sells like the darkness of this character, there's like the self-destructive nature that appears to be within him, that he you know, continually misses his, like, doesn't set an alarm and misses his transport like over several mornings like that. You know, there's something self-destructive within him that he is just not able to sell, because you're like, Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks would never miss an alarm.
He wouldn't. I just don't think he would. I'm kind of with you on this. I think it's he's so charming that you can kind of watch it anyway, but it doesn't quite work. It doesn't quite hang together. And I think there's something odd about all of these kind of Western person goes to non-Western country and has life-changing experience. That there's something that's getting a little bit uncomfortable about watching these stories, because it's very sort of, it treats, you know, him as the default and everybody else as a bit odd.
You never show whether they're actually just making fun of different cultures and customs.
Yeah.
I give them the benefit of the doubt that they're not.
Sure.
But it never sits entirely easily. And yeah, and Tom just his character comes across as like almost implausibly bumbling at times, rather than, you know, dark and troubled.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's yeah, that's a bit of a shame, because there's good bits in here, and there's interesting little nuggets, but it just doesn't quite hang together.
Yeah, I mean, he has a really lovely central relationship with with his driver. So I suppose one of the things that he, you know, one of his mistakes, which is oversleeping, getting a driver, and then using that driver over and over again, actually, you know, that starts to become his salvation, because he, you know, goes out to his village and, you know, has a interesting experience there and, you know, starts to, you know, reconnect with who he really is, man.
Yeah.
So 3 stars for this one.
We give it 3. I give it 3. Mm. I stand by it.
Good. I'm not.
It's very enjoyable film, but it doesn't really linger that long in the memory.
No, it doesn't. That's true.
Okay. So that is A Hologram for the King. Is the title explained?
Yeah, they're trying to sell a holographic conferencing service to the king.
Ah, okay. See, I thought it was all going to be quite elliptical and...
Oh, is that as well?
No, it's obvious on the nose.
Yeah, but, you know, there's probably a deeper meaning there somewhere.
Okay, all right. One day we'll have a book group type thing and we'll talk about the hidden meanings within A Hologram for the King. As it is, 3 stars for that. And that is it for this week's Emperor Podcast. Join us next week for more film-related fun. We'll be joined by 2 directors of upcoming movies. We'll be joined by James Bobin, the director of Alice Through the Looking Glass, and also Men in Black, or MIB 23. So the Men in Black 23 Jump Street mashup type thing. He talks a little bit about that. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And also a young up-and-coming director, Jodie Foster.
Wow.
Who's going to be talking about Money Monster, her George Clooney, Julia Roberts thriller, which is out next Friday as well. So stay tuned for that. Or don't. Go and live your life and then just come back in a week's time and listen to that as well. And also the X-Men Apocalypse spoiler special is out on Monday the 30th. So do bookmark your calendars. Whatever it is you do for that. Right. Until then, it is goodbye from Helen.
Toodaloo.
It's goodbye from Johnny.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. I'm off home to take off these torn purple pants.
Chris.
See you next week. Bye. Should I take them off now?
At least you're waiting until you get home. No, leave them on.
I should take them off.
On.
Okay.